neighbors. Welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. Today we have the story of a couple, Frank and Joyce Pye, a plot of land, Grand River Farm, and a community, Happy Valley, Goose Bay, and the connections among all of these. Frank and Joyce were not exactly from a farming background. They were what we call second career farmers. Joyce had been a school teacher, Frank a United Church minister. They began farming in earnest at the age where most people are looking to slow down. You don't have to hang around the agriculture industry in Newfoundland and Labrador very long before you hear their names. They started farming on the highway, as they put it. But when that area was deemed to be too polluted by various forms of runoff from the airbase, they were moved to Mud Lake Road. They rebuilt, set up a farm market, and continued on with the almost spiritual task of growing things that others need in order to live.
At the time that we were starting this up on the highway, the base was in full swing here. So there were Dutch people, there were German people, there were British people, and they have more of the tradition of market shopping.
Yes.
I dare say it was 7-8 years before we could say there was 5 cents of profit because we were putting it back. Yeah. I remember one official coming in here to a meeting with us and telling us that you can't grow potatoes in Labrador. Any question we had, there's a book with the answer somewhere.
Sadly, Frank died in September of 2017, but about a year before that, he and Joyce first approached Memorial University to see if they would be interested in assuming the land lease and purchasing some of their equipment. No other farmers were interested in taking over the farm at that time, and they didn't want it to go back to scrub trees and weeds. They were hoping that the strong links between the community and the farm could be maintained. One evening in late summer, I spent some time with Joyce Pye on the farm. It was a warm Labrador evening. The fans were running in the house. Pull up a chair. Join us.
My name is Carol Joyce Pye. My husband was Frank. The whole idea of getting into farming for us started when we bought a home here in Goose Bay that had a wood furnace, and he wanted wood for the wood furnace. And he thought, you know, that'd be a great way to spend a Saturday off on the skidoo cutting wood. But he found that every time he made a path with the skidoo into a nice stand of dried wood, he'd have to go to work the next day. And by the time he got back to it, someone else had gone in and cleaned it out. So he got kind of frustrated with it and said, I'm going to apply for a piece of land. And it'll be my piece of land and no one can come in and cut the wood. And when we did that, he said, you know, we got the land. We could grow some potatoes for next winter. And we did. And then we thought, well, we could grow some carrots and peas, too. Forgive the pun. It just grew on us. And we found that we were enjoying it so much and got so much pleasure out of it. We just kept going.
Did either of you come from a farming background?
Well, I grew up in St. John's, but in on Oxen Pond Road in the back country on St. John's, and my dad always had gooseberries and raspberries and flowers, and I always puttered in the garden with my dad. Yeah. And Frank's family originally, his mom was from Kansas, and her whole generations back were farmers. Yeah. They lived in Mount Moriah, right on the edge of the cliff on the bay.
Oh, yes.
And his mom had a garden there and among the rocks on the side of the cliff.
So this was, I guess, a second career doing a farm?
Yeah. When we started growing some things for ourselves, we were in our 60s. Late 50s and into 60, heading into 60, and knew that retirement was coming up, and we were enjoying it so much, we thought, you know, this is a great thing, because it'll give us exercise, it'll give us a reason to be up and active and going, and the food's good, and it just fitted us, I guess.
So I guess from buying that house with the wood furnace to where we are right now was quite a journey, in a way.
It was quite a journey, yes.
Yeah. So what kind of vegetables did you sell?
Oh my gosh, well, like I said, we started out with greens and potatoes and carrots and turnip, you know, just your standard. And by the time we settled in down here into this farm. I remember once speaking to a little class of children and knowing that I had to make a little presentation to the kids. And I took file cards and I printed each product that we were growing and I folded them like an accordion with scotch tape, you know. So I said to the children, what do you think I grow on my farm? And somebody said potatoes. And I said, first one. Yeah. And then I dropped down the next one and dropped down the next one. And it was a long list.
Yeah. How did that happen? Was it people asked you, can you grow, I don't know, whatever it was, peppers or whatever?
Sometimes it was that. Sometimes it was just things that we wanted to try for ourselves, things that we liked. But at the time that we were starting this up on the highway, on the farm on the highway, the base was in full swing here. So there were Dutch people, there were German people, there were British people. And they have more of a tradition of market shopping.
Yes.
And they would come with their baskets, you know, to pick up the things they wanted to buy. Yeah. And they'd say, you know, have you tried growing leeks or have you tried growing this or that? And so we'd say, well, we haven't, but we will.
So when you started, were there other farmers selling vegetables? Was there a farmer's market?
Yes. There wasn't a farmer's market, but there were other people growing vegetables and selling them on the side of the road. And
there's a long history of growing food here in Labrador.
There is. There is with the Grenfell Mission and with the Moravian people. Mm-hmm. They had gardens here. There was a Mr. Badcock way back in the early beginnings of Goose Bay who had a farm. And then there was a Mr. Snellgrove. When we started, he was quite active and was selling quite a few vegetables and things.
Yeah. Did you ever think after, like you've been in it for 5 or 10 years, that, oh, we should have done this instead at the beginning? Or was it all important to make those mistakes early?
We learned by our mistakes. People would often ask us, that, you know, you must have farming in your background. Yeah. And we'd say, well, not really. We didn't grow up on a farm, either one of us. We were book learners because we were both into education.
Yeah.
You know, any question we had, there's a book with the answer somewhere.
Did you go to conferences or
absolutely. That sort of thing? Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's one of the things that we really appreciated with the Department of Agriculture because they support farmers in going out. Mm-hmm. We didn't have summer holidays because we'd be up to our necks in farming, but every fall we went on a holiday and every fall we included a conference somewhere, especially the Acorn conferences.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
went to them faithfully every fall and learned so much and met so many people.
What kind of questions did people ask you at the market, the people who are buying your food?
The people who come to the market are people who have been made aware or somehow or other that homegrown fresh stuff is better. Yeah. There are some who didn't seem to appreciate that at all, but there was a group of people who really wanted that. And often they'd be asking, well, how do you make it grow like that? And how come mine are just this size and yours, you know, are so big
and
this kind of thing? And one of the top questions people asked over and over again, and we were surprised by that at the beginning, was, is there chemicals on it? There's a whole movement, and we were right in the middle of that. It was just coming on. People were beginning to think maybe that's where some of the cancers are coming from.
Yeah. And it seems like growing food is also growing community.
I think so, yes. That's why I think the community market is so important.
I never went to your community market. I've seen pictures of it, and from talking to people from here who went there, there's this sense that it was a community building space, almost a spiritual space or whatever. And did you consciously think about that when you were building it and growing?
Not in the beginning, but we began to sense that after a while and thought, you know, I'm glad we got into this. This is a good thing we're doing here.
Yeah. So you'd recommend it to other people thinking about retirement instead of that, going to farming.
I certainly would. I certainly would. And you know, when you're 65 heading up to 70, you need something to keep you active and busy instead of just sitting back in the rocking chair.
Yeah. So many times we talk about challenges to farming in this province, but were there some advantages to farming here, do you think?
Yes, there were, because there was a ready market, you know, and the comparison between what we were growing and what was coming down over the road in the truck, I think people could easily see this is better. And then, too, Frank and I always felt that we could give it for a better price because it didn't have to be shipped, you know, so you didn't have to have a way high price on it. You could get a reasonable price because you were saving that shipping cost. Of course, you had the shipping cost getting in your supplements, soil supplements, and the equipment. And
Did you start your plants in a greenhouse usually? Or did
I mean, there are some things that you start from seed. Yeah. But other than that, everything that I planted came out of my greenhouse.
Yeah. Do you have a piece of music that I should play, put underneath all of this somewhere?
There is one. The Field Behind the Plow.
Oh, yeah. By Stan Rogers.
Yes. Stan Rogers. Yeah. That described Frank.
Oh, did he? Yeah. Did he like to plow?
Oh, he loved his plow. He wrote his best sermons.
Oh, did he?
Up in the field, going around and around on the tractor. He said, nobody can disturb me. He puts on his muffs and comes home, he's got it all sawed out, and he's down and write it all off.
Maybe there's something about tractors. My dad used to sing hymns when he was on the tractor. This is before they had cabs on tractors, so you could hear them all across the field.
Watch the field behind the plow turn to straight dark roads. Feel the trickle in your clothes. Blow the dust cake from your nose. Hear the tractor's steady roar. Oh, you can't stop now. There's a quarter section more or less to go. And it figures that the rain keeps its own sweet time. You can watch it come for miles, but you guess you've got a while. So ease the throttle out of air. Every rod's a gain, and there's victory in every quarter mile. Poor old Cousin down the road, the heartache Hale and Hoppers brought him down. He gave it up and went to town. And Emmett Pierce the other day took a heart attack and died at 42. You could see it coming on, 'cause he worked as hard as you. In an hour, maybe more, you'll be wet clear through. The air is cooler now. Pull your hat brim further down and watch the field behind the plow turn to straight dark roads. Put another season's promise in the ground.
That's The Field Behind the Plow by Stan Rogers. Today I'm talking with Joyce Pye of Happy Valley Goose Bay. In this section, she talks about the challenges of new farmers, the financial difficulties of figuring out how to survive while waiting for the profits to come trickling in, and other frustrations, all despite solid government support. There's a real push to get new people into farming. Do you have any advice to people who are thinking of going into it?
We had challenges, and there's always going to be some, the weather and here, because you're right on the edge. But we had a particular advantage, Frank and I, because he was retiring with a pension, mm-hmm. and I was retiring mm-hmm. with a pension. Mm-hmm. So if there was a year that we spent more than we should have on the farm, or we had a failure of crop and didn't do very well, we weren't going to go hungry. You know, we had our pension. It ended up, a lot of it went into the farm.
The pension is out there in the field.
The pension is out there in the field. You know, we had that to cover our backs kind of thing. Yeah. Where it's a young person starting out doesn't have that. I know we've spoken of that, he and I both, at conferences a number of times. There has to be some way to help young people get that start. Because when we started, I mean, we must have been, I dare say it was 7-8 years before we could say there was 5 cents of profit, because we were putting it back into, you know, we wanted a tractor and we wanted this and we wanted that and we needed amendments for the soil and it was just all put in. And you, how does a young person do that without a salary? They can't. It's impossible. Yeah. There has to be something. I don't know. A government has never come up with any plan or any idea, but there has to be some way to help young people get a start.
If you had just sold your produce to a grocery store and never saw the consumer, the person who was buying it and eating it, that would be a different experience probably.
Totally. Because you wouldn't get that feedback, you know, that sense of satisfaction that comes directly from the person.
Right. Do you still meet people people who say, oh, I wish I could get your peppers again?
All the time. Audrey came today and she said, oh, Joyce, you'll never know how much I miss coming here. You know, I'm constantly meeting people in the supermarket or on the street and saying, oh, I wish we could go back to the farm.
Yeah. What was your favorite vegetable that you grew?
Carrots, number one.
Carrots?
Yeah.
Is there something about
so
Labrador
sweet.
Carrots?
Oh,
I don't know. Yeah.
They are. Sugar snap peas, I guess, would be my second choice.
Was there something you thought about growing but never quite did and you thought, oh,
yes, asparagus.
Asparagus,
It defeated me. I never could get it. It was, and I guess it was because we were successful with so many other things that I didn't have the time to be picking and fooling and fiddling with asparagus, and that's a plant that you need to...
It's a fickle crop.
It is.
Very fickle.
I tried several times and just said, to heck with it.
Give it up. We're really trying to increase food production here, and you've heard what we're trying to double it by 2022 and so on. Do you have any wise words of advice for policymakers? Anything that could help with that?
There were so many frustrations sometimes, even for us, and we would get terribly frustrated with the Department of Agriculture sometimes. Mm-hmm. I know they did good things, and I know right now the help that farmers get is amazing compared to some of the other provinces. Mm-hmm. I know we talk at workshops with people from other provinces, and they're amazed at the kind of help and support we are getting here. Yeah. But there's still frustrations with it. And I think one of the biggest is the time lapse. If you wanted to apply for some assistance with getting a new piece of land or a new piece of equipment, you'd be given about a short time period to get your application in. It had to be all written up, and it had to be done properly, and it had to be ready within a certain period of time. And then they'd spend 2 years before they got back to you. You know, you wanted a piece of equipment for this fall, but you don't hear from it till the next spring. The government has its own time frames, and they're times are set. As far as they're concerned, the world runs on their time frame, but nature doesn't. You know, if you need that piece of equipment in the fall, you've got to have it in the fall, not next summer.
Is farming a good way to get to know people?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, what's more basic than your food? It's like talking about the weather. Everybody talks about what they like to eat.
Did you ever once in a while think, or you and Frank think, you know, we should have maybe done this early on instead of this education thing? Did you ever think, I should have started farming early?
No, I can't say that we did, no, because he was committed to his work with the church, and I loved my teaching too. I was a teacher and I loved teaching.
You still grow some a little bit? You have a small garden?
I got a few little raised beds by the back doorstep, and I was expecting that the university would be further advanced by now, so I wasn't expecting to have strawberries up in the field. So early in the spring, I went up and I took some of runner plants and put them in a little square, just a little 4x4 patch down here. I'm so disappointed, really, that it's taking so long with the university, because they're going to have an awful job with the weeds when they do come.
It would be great to see this place come alive in a slightly different incarnation, but still true to the sense of community that you and Frank built.
It would mean so much to me. It really would. I'm still really hoping that it will work. But I know it's going to be a much more difficult job for them when they do take over, because it's amazing. The path, to drive up to the path, now I can hardly get up through with the truck, because the trees are just growing right out over the roadway so quickly. I had spoken earlier about some of the frustrations with agriculture, and when we were starting farming here, there were a couple of other people starting farming too, and I mean there'd been a history of agriculture in Labrador, but the people in the Department of Agriculture, really, I mean I remember one official coming in here to a meeting with us and telling us that you can't grow potatoes in Labrador, you know. He was getting annoyed with us because we were looking for help with equipment for potato harvesters and this stuff, and you know, he was getting a little bit impatient and saying, you can't grow potatoes down here.
You proved him wrong, for sure.
He sure did. And I mean, they'd been growing potatoes of all things, and so many hundreds of pounds come in from the mainland, and it's so silly, because we could grow every bit that we need here.
So are you optimistic? And there's a lot of young people who are interested in local food?
There's a lot of young people interested in local food. I think people are more aware now of what they eat and the importance of what they eat, but there's not a lot of young people interested in farming. It's because of this impossibility of it. Mm-hmm. And when you tell them that the government will give you all kinds of assistance and they'll help you get a piece of land, But everything that you buy, you have to come up with the cash beforehand. And they'll pay you back. And if you raise your family on the farm and you build your home and you build your infrastructure, but you get sick, then the government's going to take it all away from you. Young people just say, like, heck, no way I'm getting into that. I don't know where the answers are or how to get around that, but there must be some way to help young people get in it. There has to be. I don't know, even if the government had to provide a basic salary for a family for 4 or 5 years until a farmer could get established or something. There has to be something.
And part of it, too, is people like you and Frank who decided at one point in your life you're going to grow food. And it's small decisions like that, I think, probably that build an industry.
Yeah. And Odess is doing a great job here now. I'm amazed at what he grows. Without water and without electricity. I mean, it just blows my mind. Frank wasn't very long before he said, gee whiz, we got to have water and we got to have electricity. You can't run a tool or, you know. And again, I think his thinking is, I'm not putting my money into something that someone's going to come and make me tear down.
And if the harvest's any good, the money just might cover all the loans. You've mortgaged all you own. Buy the kids a winter coat. Take the wife back east for Christmas if you can. All summer she hangs on when you're so tied to the land. For the good times come and go, but at least there's rain, so this won't be barren ground when September rolls around. So watch the field behind the plow turn to straight dark roads. Put another season's promise in the ground. Watch the field behind the plow turn to straight dark roads. Put another season's promise in the ground.
Yes, that's the unmistakable baritone of Stan Rogers and his song, The Field Behind the Plow, a request from my guest today, Joyce Pye. In this final segment, we open the discussion about the complicated balance among farmers between independence and cooperation.
One of the things I'd like to add, because I've been talking on and on about me and my viewpoints, but Frank played an important role here in the development of the little agricultural committee that we had here. It seems to be falling on hard times right now, but I'm sure that they'll work out their problems and get on. And when you lose someone who's played a key role, it takes a little while to, for the dust to settle, to get for people to get back on their feet again.
So Frank used his skills that he'd learned in another area to help organize and pull people together. It's one of the things in agriculture that is really needed is more communication. People who farm in different ways, but trusting each other and organizing together and having a more common voice.
And that's not easy because farmers are usually quite independent people.
You betcha,
And it's difficult for them sometimes to have to come together and talk things out.
Yeah.
I know when we got the new tractor, it was a big, big issue. And people, I mean, we had quite a hassle to get the policies settled, and it was quite a time. There were people who left the association in anger, and that wasn't the way it should be. And I guess you had to be very independent to go into farming.
Yeah, but still, there are many places where farmers did create co-ops and they did work together.
And they did, and it makes a big difference when people can. That tractor, this is either the ninth or the tenth year.
So, this is a tractor that was purchased for a number of different farmers
for the association.
For the association,
it was purchased for the association.
That's the Lake Melville Agriculture
Association. Association. It was kind of a special deal because at that time the government wasn't providing any assistance for tractors. You could get equipment, but not tractor, and farmer had to have their own tractor. And at the time, Ed Byrne was the Minister of Agriculture, and that man became notorious because of what happened to him later on in government. But he was, we all said he was the best agricultural minister that we had in our time, that we experienced, and we experienced seven or eight of them, of course, and because he seemed to be genuinely interested in the North and felt the North, you know, was important and needed to be recognized, so some of the special problems needed to be recognized. But when he agreed, and it was him that got the tractor funding for us, he wanted a set of policies that would assure that the thing wasn't going to be mishandled beaten up in 2 or 3 years. And we worked out a program where we had a hired operator who was not a farmer, and no farmer used the equipment on used the tractor on his own. Only the operator used it. Our treasurer, which was me at the time, worked with that operator so that we handled all the paperwork, and everybody, they met every year and decided, looked at their budget and decided, looked at what it cost to operate it and to pay for the operator and the insurance and all the other things and how much they took in from the farmers, and they would adjust the rental cost each year, and it worked out beautifully. But it was a fight to get it in place.
Is there a need for a Labrador policy on agriculture, or a Northern policy on agriculture?
A Northern policy on agriculture, I think, is needed, because there are unique problems here. As I say, with the climate, you're right on that edge. Frank and I have lost, I think, twice in the time that we've been farming, a whole field of perhaps, I don't know, 7,000-8,000 strawberries in one winter because there was no snow. And if we get a winter with that bitter cold, 30, 40 below zero and no snow, those plants are gone, you know? So, that loss, that's quite a kick in the teeth.
Yeah.
You got to start all over again. Yeah. So that kind of thing, and that can happen. And you know, I suppose it's no different than anywhere out west. They can have drought, they can have floods, and farmers get hit with this kind of thing. And then the other detrimental thing is the cost of bringing in
shipping
supplements. And the policy that they have with lime is marvelous. Yeah. It's excellent. Yeah. It helps the farmers, but it's only lime. But everything else, you have to ship, and your equipment you have to ship. It's a real handicap. Even now in my position, I've got a field full of equipment up there, and I can't sell it. The farmers here, there's only 3 or 4 of them. Yeah. They've got the equipment they need. There's nobody going to drive in from Quebec or Deer Lake somewhere to buy used equipment. I've got an almost brand new fertilized spreader, fertilized spreader. I've got an almost brand new failed flail chopper, and it's sitting there rusting away. Like equipment that cost us a lot of money, and it's just a liability.
That's part of the problem of having such a small market, no real infrastructure. There's not a machinery dealer who'll just say, oh, I'll buy that, use it for parts or whatever.
But that's not here.
Joyce, thanks so much for taking the time to do this. It's a wonderful place.
Oh, we sure think so. Yeah.
For the good times come and go, but at least there's rain, so this won't be barren ground when September rolls around. So watch the field behind the plow turn to straight dark roads, put another season's promise in the ground.
In late June of 2019, the official announcement came out that Memorial University was taking over the Grand River Farm lease. The local campus of the university, the Labrador Institute, had been leading the consultations and community collaborations around the facility. It will be called the Pi Center for Northern Boreal Food Systems. By widely accepted regulations, any name at the university must be at least 6 words long, preferably more. Will this new center further support the same rich connection between land, people, and community that was nurtured by the Grand Lake Farm? Many of us will be watching closely and actively hoping that will be the case. And for some of you listening in, remember that farming can be a good retirement project. It will keep you active at the time of life when you may need the motivation to move. It's even better than getting a dog. Shucks, you can have a farm and a dog. That'll please your doctor.
I know we talk at workshops with people from other provinces, and they're amazed at the kind of help and support we are getting here. Oh, he loved his plow. He wrote his best sermons.
Oh, did he?
Up in the field, going around and around on the tractor. A Northern policy on agriculture, I think, is needed because there are unique problems here.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The song for today's show was The Field Behind the Plow by Stan Rogers. The theme music, Cluck Old Hen, was performed this week by an old-timey garage band from Nashville, the Bashful Mountain Broadcasters. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Imke. Join me again next time. Happy trails.
You're 65, heading up to 70, you need something to keep you active and busy, and instead of just sitting back in the rocking chair.
Yeah.